This is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Here's about an hour and 20-minute conference call that we did on March 14th, and we have two very special guests, Richard Johnson, the developer of the HMA system, and Sam Bowman, a consultant in his 70s located out of Nashville, Tennessee. We've also got consultants from all over the world on the line, including Dave Flannery, Gary Carter, and Rob Henshaw, one of our new consultants, and we're covering a lot of questions, giving support to the new marketing consultants, and offering our best advice, best support in this call. We cover tons of information, especially handling the subject of how to get a client using outbound telemarketing. You're going to also hear lots of advice from Dave Flannery on what he's been doing in his consulting practice, currently working with 16 existing clients. We're going to talk about exactly how to close a client, whether you close them on the first call or coming back with a proposal. We're going to give you exact closing scripts. We're going to give you telemarketing scripts that you can take in the transcripts and use for your own benefit. We're just covering a lot of material here, offering continued support for the consultants, and I hope that you enjoy and benefit from this call. Enjoy. It's March 14th, and I want to welcome everybody to the March 14th HMA conference call. We've got two very special guests, of course, Mr. Richard Johnson. He's the developer of the 21st Century Marketing System, i.e. the private label, the HMA marketing system. And we have Sam Bowman from Nashville, Tennessee. Rob had pointed out to me some errors on the site and broken links, and I really appreciate that. And he was putting in his DVD number 6 from the most recent DVD training, and we determined that the number 6 DVD is the same as the number 2. So anyone who has their number 6 DVD, it'll be printed number 6, but when they put it in the DVD player, it's number 2. Please let me know and I'll immediately send out another one. I also want to let anyone know that we'll be recording this call and we'll be posting it up on the HMA University and possibly somewhere on the hardtofindseminars.com site for informational purposes or promotional purposes. And I want to welcome Sam, and I did a recording with Sam probably about a year and a half ago, Sam, and I've gotten a lot of comments from that recording. We just heard a testimonial from Rob that a couple ideas from that recording really helped him solidify and close a $15,000 consulting deal. So I wanted to bring you back because, Sam, you've got a lot of experience out in the trenches. You've got a lot of experience with consulting, and maybe the best way to start would be for you to explain, how did you and Richard get hooked up first? Bring me back to the beginning, and what was your involvement with consulting, and tell us what you've been doing currently. And then we'll get into some of the questions from some of the consultants, and we'll kind of tackle them one at a time.
I've been using Richard's system for 10 years now. I've been a consultant for a total of 12 years. My first 2 years I was doing manufacturing consulting, and I really didn't enjoy the amount of travel that you had to do being a manufacturing type of consultant. So I became aware of a seminar that was held here in Nashville on qualifications for a consultant. My wife and I took that just as some refresher to make sure that we were going on the right path and consulting was really going to be what I would want to invest my time in. And that was presented by the International Guild of Professional Consultants by a gentleman by the name of Elsom Elder. And following that one evening seminar, Elsom invited me to participate in one of Richard's training programs down in Orlando, Florida. And my wife and I were able to attend that, and it was a very concentrated 2.5-day seminar with Richard on his system. And I got very much out of it, knew this was what I wanted to do. I knew the elements of the system fairly well, but I didn't know how to integrate them. So when I got back to Nashville, Richard was my mentor. And with his help and with choosing the route of going through a teleprospector to do my booking of appointments, I was able to gradually grow the business. I did it slowly the first year. But then it really took off, and I've been doing it full-time ever since that point. So I've known Richard for the last 10 years and highly respect him and known he's been down in the trenches too, and he doesn't give you just the methodology to walk away from. He's there to help, as I try to do also.
Very good. Richard, how has he been as a student for you?
He just turned around from the training and went and did everything he was asked to do. And he just followed the system. And when you'll do that, it will work. So I know from the start that he got this calling group, and he had to work with the scripting a little bit. He started with what scripting he got in the training, but he had to make adjustments. And I think Sammy went through probably several different calling groups, and he did exactly what he was trained to do, and it's worked for him.
Let's just move into some of the questions, because we've got a lot of them. We've got so little time. Gary, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, there's Gary Carter from Charlotte, North Carolina. Gary, I'm going to ask these questions on your behalf, okay? The first question for you, Sam, is what is the most you've ever charged a client?
For an implementation, $15,000 to get the growth that they were choosing. There are always other elements of service that present themselves that I get revenue from. But as far as the system is concerned itself, it's about $15,000.
Okay, and what is the longest time it took you to meet the increase in the business that you had promised?
That's a darn good question. Sometimes I don't really know the answer because if I do meet, I don't get a call. After the final module implementation, the ones that I'm aware of that I have kept track of and monitored, it's been about 4 to 5 months for them to make it. The shortest time was during the implementation, which was a 4-module implementation, and we had the growth by the end of the 4th module. So I try to keep track of my clients, but I guarantee you, if they're having trouble, they're going to be contacting me. So in many respects, I let them call on me rather than me taking my time calling on them, if you follow it.
How many steps do you usually do when you're working with a client?
On the average, with my targeted market segment, which is companies $1 million in annual sales, through $5 million in annual sales. On the average, it's a 4-module implementation.
Okay. Have you ever done a contingency for part of the profit increases?
I did it once. It's very risky. You have all of your time and talent invested normally before you get any kind of return, unless you structure it where you measure the growth per month and can get a percentage that way, but I wasn't able to structure it that way. And it worked out all right, but from a cash flow standpoint, it was detrimental to my business because I had to wait until I had met the growth target before I got my contingency fee, and I didn't like that, so I tended to stay away from that.
Well, how about after you do some projects, when they pay you for 2 or 3 projects, do you see contingency opportunities, and if you did you consider setting up a contingency for further consulting after they've committed and paid you some money for project work?
Yeah, you could call it a contingency, but I've called a retainer.
I got you. Tell me how you structure that.
Well, I structured it on a monthly basis, you know, several $100 a month to be on call to help them in any way possible after they've met their goal. Until they've met their goal, you know, I belong to them. But after they've met their target growth and they want to keep being refreshed, because these are people who are not really marketing experts. They just don't have the time to do it, don't know what to do in most of the cases. So having a fallback crutch, somebody like me, the contingency retainer type of fee basis has worked in about 4 out of my client base.
What types of businesses have you concentrated on in your consulting practice, and which ones would you avoid?
Well, let me talk about the ones that I've avoided first, and then it leaves it pretty wide open for the rest of the market segments out there. I don't do printers because the market is so fragmented. It's such a small niche, and everybody is fighting for this little bitty niche. I have taken on printers, but it's been a very, very rugged process to get them to achieve their growth because the competition is so very, very tough. I don't do cleaners. And the reason I don't do cleaners is because they are faced with such a pollution hindrance to their business. They have such high fees for disposing of their cleaning solutions, such an overhead cost that it makes it very difficult to grow. And again, the competition is extremely competitive in the cleaning business. I don't do attorneys. I don't do any kind of automotive related business. Again, the automotive industry is fragmented pretty much, and the competition level is extremely high there. And then from my own personal choice, I don't do liquor stores. But that's just me. It doesn't have anything to do with that market segment at all. I have had good success in manufacturing, very good success in retail. Wholesale distribution has been very, very good. And out of those three market segments, you have a really high segment population that you can select your client base from.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Is there a particular reason why you don't do attorneys?
They are only part of a big organization, and you have to address the big organization. If you have a one-man office, you might be all right there, but the ones that would be receptive to good marketing, I've found, have been the 5- or 6-man office, and you have to work with an operation by committee. And if you work with an operation by committee, it's very frustrating, very time-consuming, and not very satisfactory as far as I'm concerned.
Sam, let's talk about your fee structure. How much do you charge per project and per step or what?
That's very fluid, and I back into it rather than have a set fee structure up front. My target is to make my fee structure 1/10 of the bottom line profit growth that I'm able to achieve, simply because if I'm able to maintain that 10-to-1 ratio, my fee structure just becomes insignificant compared to the cost associated with my fee. I will drop down in some cases to 5-to-1 whenever the company is large enough to be able to handle it, and therefore my fee structure goes up. But for example, if I'm able to put $125,000 gross profit on a company books, I would be targeting $12,500 as my fee as a 10-to-1, but if they're strong enough, I would then drop it down to maybe 7-to-1 to get the fee structure to maybe $15,000 for the implementation. And then the number of modules that are required depends upon what their annual sales are and how much growth they are trying to achieve to get this, by this example, $125,000 gross profit. So it's a fluid situation, but if you want to talk averages, my average charge per module is about $2,500 to $3,000.
Do you ask for the money per project as you go along, or do you ask for it all up front? How do you ask and get paid?
It's a pay-as-you-go situation where coming in to begin implementation of a set of modules with a client, I have already left my business card and enough information there on the first meeting in order to be set up in their accounts payable system, because that could cost you a week's time of just getting the processing done through their accounting system. But when I come in to begin the survey portion of developing their S&P or their UST, I bring an invoice. And I dropped the invoice on the CEO's desk or whomever I'm working with and said, this is for the first module, and I would appreciate whenever it's convenient to you to be able to get this back to me. And so it's a pay-as-you-go upfront type of situation. Now, I've had two who I've attempted to work with that were actually crooks, and I'm patient, but when I'm through module number one and I don't have my check, then I'm ready to break the relationship, and I tell them so. So I've had two that have attempted to gain knowledge without paying for it, and I just walked away from them.
So you never got paid on those two?
No, on those two I didn't. I only had one module invested.
Do you do any seminar workshop classes?
Not in the sense that Richard talks about in his training, where you speak to the Chamber of Commerce or to the Rotary Club or this type of thing. I've done a great deal of work with entrepreneurial organizations. Some outplacement companies here in Nashville have used me to explain the entrepreneurial route for candidates who are looking for different career paths because they've been laid off or whatever the situation might be with their previous employer. And I do take them through the pluses and minuses of being an entrepreneur and in turn being a consultant. I might have maybe 5 or 6 there, and they may be going into the consulting field, and they call me back, and I try to help them out doing things like that. It's really a goodwill development because they're in startup mode, and when a company's in startup mode, that's the highest risk point that you have, and I try to stay away from startups.
What are some of the negative things you've encountered as a consultant?
Well, the first one is the clients who want to teach you. But thankfully, they're few and far between. The ones that are really interested in your services are usually those that are hurting. They need something in their business. They know it's not working right, and they're looking for someone to do something for them that they can't do for themselves. But there's always those out there who think they can get something for nothing, and I have to be very leery about those who want to teach you. So you set a time limit. If they don't pay you, then you walk. And the other negative would be only one I've run into this way, and that was a client that just wouldn't do what I told her she had to do to implement. And this one just would not implement, and therefore, since she wouldn't implement, I had to leave her. Unfortunately, her company didn't make it after that, but I guess I'd have to call it a negative because you have to do it, and that's solving business problems. And this goes a step further than what Richard trained me on. I learned this by School of Hard Knocks, that every business has problems, and if you don't identify those problems and don't assist in their solution, then they will impede the ability of the company to grow their sales. So those three aspects would be the ones I classify as negative, although it's gotten to be such a routine thing to recognize you're going to have to solve business problems and do it that it's not necessarily a negative. It's just part of the implementation process now.
Mike, I think what I've kind of come to call those are anti-USPs. And Sam is great to acknowledge that those exist in every company, and you have to kind of be aware of what those other problems might be. It might be people that get in the way. It might be systems in production or customer service, and it might be financial issues that are kind of outside the scope of marketing, and you can start doing your marketing system, and these things can be in the background, ready to play havoc with it, ready maybe even to kill it, or probably most often just impede its implementation. So those are important things.
Gary, do you have any other questions for Sam that we haven't covered that popped up in your mind?
Yeah, you said a couple of things that kind of caught my attention. One is, what is a calling group? You had mentioned that you had several calling groups. What is that?
Well, I don't remember the term calling group. It is my contact list that I purchased by establishing a criteria of the market segments I wish to address. One was I didn't wish to travel outside the seven counties surrounding Nashville so I could be home every night. Two is I wanted to address businesses from 1 to 5 million in sales. They were the most opportunistic groups for me to direct my consulting effort toward. And the third were the SIC code restrictions, or now the National Industrial Code restrictions that I mentioned earlier on businesses that I do not wish to work with. And from that criteria, my list provider would give me a contact list that I would use with my teleprospector to begin the calling process and to select from those who were willing to give me an appointment.
I understand. Now, one other question that I have. You mentioned that there were other ancillary sources for income that you had available during this process. Could you enlighten me on some of those?
Sure. Identifying the operating problems in the company. I sell myself as the problem solver. I'm your temporary marketing manager, and I'm also your problem solver. But there are certain things that I'm going to have an extra fee on. Like one client had an organizational problem, and it was being caused simply because he didn't have an operating manual in his business. He didn't have an employee manual. So I gave him a fee for $6,000 to do his employee manual. And I did it for him for that. I've had those who did not have a business plan and had no idea where they were going. So I constructed a business plan, but I charge them fees for that type of thing. So when you kick over the rocks, their problems become opportunities for you that you must address. You can't grow their business, and two, it's another revenue stream for you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Rob Henschel out of Traverse City, Michigan has some questions, and Rob's been experiencing some challenges in hiring cold callers. So, Sam, he asked, can you go into some detail on your early experience hiring cold callers, and how did you determine that you were going to start using cold callers to get your consulting practice going?
First of all, I tried cold calling myself, and so did my wife, who is my administrative assistant. I was lousy at it. I didn't like it. It came through that I didn't like it. I wasn't doing any good. So with some guidance from Richard, I went looking for some professionals to do it. And the first time out of the box, I was able to find a true telemarketing company in Nashville here who would take me on as a client. And I did hire them for X number of hours to represent me using my call list to try to set up appointments. Now, I work with them on creating the script. I work with them to get around the blocker routine that you always run into. And they were very successful in getting me started, although the number of clients that I was able to handle initially was much less than I could do today just for the lack of experience. I hadn't been up over the learning curve. So I found later on, though, that most teleprospecting company, they don't want a short-term contract. They want a long-term contract. So I couldn't go that way because once you're booked up at full capacity for your consulting effort, you don't need a teleprospector. So they have to go by their way. So two times a year, I have to acquire, train, monitor a teleprospector. And the way that I have been successful in doing that is I've addressed those who really enjoy working at home. And I just put an ad in the paper, work from your home, business-to-business appointment setting. And I get response to that. Well, as I said, I acquire my candidates for teleprospecting by a newspaper ad. I can tell by a voice interview when they call in for an appointment as to whether their voice is going to be satisfactory to give the right presentation. I then have a interview in my office, and I actually let them read my teleprospecting script back to me, no training, no help in any way, just to see how they respond to it. Then if they appear to be the quality of voice presentation and the professionalism that comes through the voice presentation, I will hire them on contract labor basis. I've never paid more than $15 an hour contract labor. I will then bring them back to my office and train them on both the teleprospecting script and on the procedure for getting around a blocker that you always run into.
Can you explain what is a blocker for anyone who doesn't understand?
Well, it's like the executive secretary to the CEO. Well, Mr. Jones isn't available today. May I take a message for him? And one of the techniques we use is to really respond by saying, well, we really don't want to disturb him, but we're anxious for him to understand the opportunity he has to grow his business and bottom line profits through this technique. Are you saying that you're willing to make the decision for Mr. Jones that your company's not interested in that? And by using that type of technique or something very close to it, we usually can get around a blocker. Not every time, but most of the time we can get around a blocker. The teleprospector will take my list and then begin the calls. I have first gotten her to call me and make the presentation to me so I can listen to her voice over the telephone to see how it sounds. After she's been doing it, she or he, I used to think that a male voice would be the most advantageous, but it's not. It's the presentation technique and the sincerity and the professionalism that they portray in their presentation. After about 2 days worth of calls, I will actually go to their home and listen to them making the presentation from that location to make sure that there's no interference, like children running around screaming and things like that that come through the phone in a negative way. The first week is a learning curve for every teleprospector I've worked with, and I don't really get much appointment setting. I'll be lucky to get one the first week. But if the second week I'm not booking appointments consistently with the statistics that I've learned, then I know I don't have a winner. And I go and just terminate their services and get the next one on the list. I've only had to go through maybe 3 at the most to get one that can really do the job on every 6-month cycle I've been through.
Rob says he's on his 5th caller now, and after about 300-plus calls, none of them have been able to book a solid appointment. Rob, is this helping you at all? Is there any specific questions you've got for Sam that could help you out a little more?
Well, what kind of scripts are you using these days?
The one I crafted way back at the beginning. I do let the teleprospector, after the first week, rephrase the script in their own presentation style so that it doesn't sound so canned, but the verbiage is pretty much the same information. It's just in their method of presentation rather than mine.
Do you get any people that start calling and they just find out they really don't have what it takes?
Yeah, sure. And I've had a couple that have said, this is not my cup of tea and I don't want to do it. So that's fine. We sever relationships and I go get somebody else. But I've always been successful in finding someone that can book me appointments and me in turn be able to make my presentations.
I think the way you had that ad may bring more results, Rob. You know, he had the ad as appointment setter. Rob, in your ads, were you doing telemarketers wanted, or how did you phrase the ad in the classified section on Craigslist?
I tried several different ways. I think my most recent one was loud, brassy phone voice wanted, and then I went into basically what we're doing, setting up businesses, cold calling. I put right in the ad, and I got a couple of responses, and I've only had one person last more than 2 days. They all quit on the second day or before.
Sam? If you could give a brief description of your script, let Rob hear that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Hello, this is Jane Jones, and I'm calling for Sam Bowman, who's president of the Focus on Sales Marketing Company here in Nashville. Sam is a consultant who works with small to medium-sized companies to grow their sales and bottom-line profits, and he guarantees his work. All he would require is 1 hour of your time to be able to show you the information, how this systemized approach can grow your sales and bottom line profits. Are you interested in growing your sales and bottom line profits?
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
If they say yes, then I go on with the next step in the presentation. If they say no, I have the teleprospector say, well, thank you very much for your time, and we wish you continued success with your business, and hang up. But then if they say yes, we would be very much interested in talking to Sam, and then she comes back or he comes back and says, this is an absolutely free one-hour consultation with no obligations, and you will benefit from some of the marketing experience that he has had in the past. It's well worth your time whether or not you choose to accept his services or not. Now, Sam's available on Tuesday, April the 6th at 1 o'clock. Would you be available at that time? Yes, I would. Well, I'll be happy to have Sam meet you at that time, but he will call and confirm the appointment prior to coming in order to prevent any confusion or any disruption in your schedule. Thank you very much for your time.
Rob, I was just going to say, I don't know if your callers were getting through to the decision maker or the owner. That's critical.
I recorded them, so I know what they're doing. And I know there's a problem with presentation and, like I said, sincerity, professionalism, and presentation. It could just be that I haven't found the right person yet.
Sure.
Now, there's something else, Rob, that you could do. If your selection criteria or who you have in your immediate area is not good, you're running out of prospects. I also pay my teleprospectors their long-distance charges, if they have any. Sometimes there's a toll in the seven counties surrounding Nashville. But if you go to a larger marketing area that might offer you more prospects to choose from and include in the fee the long-distance calling charges, you might be more successful in having a better selection.
How much should he invest in a calling service? Sam, what has been your ROI on hiring out telemarketers to get clients? Can you give us some numbers on your return on investment for calls?
Sure. First of all, I only let them call 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, because they become punch drunk and their voice deteriorates if they try more than that. I let them do from 9 to 12, and then I shifted. I used to be 1 to 2, but I go 2 to 3 because I was running into too many extended lunch times and wasn't getting through to the decision maker. But the first week has got a stiff learning curve, and you'd be lucky to book one appointment, so you've got $300 invested right there. The second week, I really begin to pick them up, though, and I usually get about 4 to 7 appointments the second week. And my close ratio is 50%, and my target is from 4 to 6 clients at a time, depending upon their size. So if I get 4 that second week and I can close 2, and my average is 4 modules at $2,500 a module, $10,000 for $450 teleprospecting investment to that point, you know, it's a pretty good return on investment.
That is an excellent description. I've paid more than Sam in the past for good telephone service. And if you remember the lifetime value of a client, and so in this case 4 modules at $10,000, then, yeah, $400 to $1,000 investment's not bad.
But I'm really intrigued why you're having this problem level up in your territory right there. Is there anything that I've been able to share with you that you're not now doing?
You know, what I think I really need is a just-do-this approach. And Michael Seitz, he does an interview with Ari, and Ari gives one example of an approach to use. And then in the system, there's a different approach, a different script to use. And then he just gave us a third one. And you know what? What I'm really looking for is just do this, and you'll get results, the definition of a system. And I've been trying to tweak the script here and there, like, is it the script, is it the person? And that's really what I'm after.
Rob, you've mentioned you haven't had anyone go longer than 2 days, and according to Sam, the first week is pretty low results. So I think it may be just a matter of getting that right person to stick with it. What are you paying them per hour, these callers you've worked with?
The most recent one was $10 an hour. I was starting them at 8, moving it to 10, and say, okay, after you get some results, or after a couple of weeks, we'll move it up to 15. And they were all fine with that, and that could be the problem.
Are there any companies in your area that are actual companies, not individual people, but they're on the phone all the time? They do it for a business.
I did look in the Yellow Pages, and I saw one there that I haven't contacted. That's a possibility I was thinking of.
Yeah, you might want to do that. You'll probably pay a little more. I mean, I here in the Salt Lake area got up to $21 an hour, but their performance was good enough and my closing good enough that it was certainly worth it. So it may be that you got to maybe pay a little more. Sam's at 15. So it may be that you got to pay a little more to get a better caller. But, yeah, I would check that group and just see.
Yeah, if I can make $300 an hour, I don't mind paying someone $100 to do the call.
So there you go.
It all works out.
That's right.
Now, I want to bring something up. Cold calling is absolutely the hardest way to get a client. I guess if you have someone effective doing it yourself, there's nothing harder. And I'd ask you, Rob, do you have any kind of center of influence, anyone that could endorse you, whether you trade your consulting services for an endorsement to a customer list or a group of people who have some respect for the endorser? And certainly, Richard and Sam, I would think you would agree that having someone endorse you is a lot more powerful before you go in on that presentation.
You must have endorsements. Getting started is the biggest void you have. Now, you have the system endorsements that come down from Richard and Michael, and those are good, but they don't really give you the strength in your own marketing area because most of the time they haven't had successes in your marketing area. You're going to have a little barrier right there, and getting a personal endorsement is better than nothing.
Rob, do you like putting on workshops, or have you done that?
In the marketing area, I've done trainings in other areas. But yeah, I enjoy that.
Well, that's the next best endorsement, is to get a chamber group to sponsor you, to get a manufacturing group maybe to sponsor you. That's one way to work with printers. Printers could sponsor a workshop for their clients, because if the printer can help their clients grow, then the printing grows. So I've done that. I've done the chambers. I've done manufacturing associations.
Starting out from scratch, how do you approach a printer or an accountant or someone? They're going to say, who the heck are you?
So point to your other training workshops that you've done, and you'd say something like, I'm taking this experience and expanding the practice. I now have added marketing workshops to my portfolio, and I thought of you, and I thought of your business, and I thought if your clients could grow, you would grow. So I'd like to sponsor a workshop for your client base. I've got the flyer. I'll pay for all the costs. I just need you to promote it to your group. And it's a three-hour workshop. We could do it on a Wednesday. We could charge $29, or we could make it free. But I think one of your best starting points would be a chamber group, because they are an economic development center in your state and in your local area. These guys are constantly looking for good content for workshops, and they're going to welcome a marketing. My guess is that they just haven't had one.
I've learned in my presentation to the decision maker, and you could do this as you're trying to present your position to someone who you want to endorse you for a seminar, I give them a copy of this tape or DVD, because 2 days out of their office, they've forgotten about you. They don't know what you're talking about. But I've had great success with them referring to that media and knowing more about the system. And it's been a great aid in closing, and it might help you in booking your seminar.
That's the end of part one. Please continue to part two.